Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. Today I've got Trent Allwyn back on the show. We spoke to him in May of 2014. He was someone that was basically on the journey from a keen punter to a semi-professional punter, and eventually had the goal of becoming a professional full-time. So he's putting in a lot of work to do that and focusing on harness racing and staying in touch with a few mentors and basically trying to improve his skills and his results. So let's have a chat with Trent and find out how he's been going. Hi, everyone, it's Dave here, and I'd like to welcome Trent Allwyn back to the show. How are you going, Trent?
I'm good, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Yeah, going really well, thanks, and thanks for joining us again as we follow your journey. For those that missed the chat, it was almost a year ago now, I think it's about 10 months. Just to give a brief rundown of your background, basically, you were someone that was bored in an accounting job and decided that you wanted to become a full-time professional punter, but you also understood that was going to take some time and that was a learning curve involved. So when we last spoke, you were putting in pretty much the equivalent of a full-time effort. I think it was around 40 hours a week to go from a keen punter to a semi-professional. Tell us what's been happening over the last year or so.
All over the past year, you know, it's been a fair learning curve. I think when I spoke to you last time, I was looking at sort of Gloucester Park, which is, you know, my favourite track and, you know, my strongest point. And I was also looking at Melton. You know, since then I've scrapped Melton for a number of reasons. I just found it, you know, tough trying to follow two different states. The racing's, you know, complete different style. You've got to learn all the drivers, the horses, the trainers. It's just too many horses to keep track of, so I've just completely isolated to WA now, and I'm looking mainly at Gloucester Park and the Metropolitan Company.
All right, I understand why you want to focus on one state. A lot of the guys we speak to that are successful have done the same thing, but why Gloucester Park? You're a Victorian, why not you know, Victoria, New South Wales, somewhere on the East Coast, why Gloucester Park?
One of the reasons is, well, with WA being such an isolated state, you don't get too many raiders, you know, turning up to Gloucester Park to race except for some of the feature races. So a good starting point is they are the same horses that race against each other. I don't have to look at the form, you know, for a New South Wales horse, try and gauge how does that stack up against WA. And just with Victoria, I notice that a lot. You get, you know, there's so many Victorian horses. You get New South Wales horses coming down. You get Tasmanian horses coming up, and it was just hard trying to put form lines through them. Whereas with Gloucester Park, it's the same sort of horses. You can go, well, horse A beat horse B. Now here's horse C. Oh, it raced horse A. You know, you can put a line through the form. The times are, when you're only looking at one track, you know, there's only a couple of distances you can actually try to match up the times. And also one of the parts that I enjoy, which a lot of people don't, is the fact that there is a bias at the track. You know, I hear a lot of casual punters say, they'll complain, oh, another leader won, another leader won. Well, why not use that to your advantage?
And does that track bias have anything to do with the weather conditions, or is it just there a lot of the time regardless?
No, it doesn't really matter from what I've seen. I mean, there's not too many meetings that I've covered where there's been a massive downpour of rain. And even when there was, the one that stands out was I'm the Mighty Quinn. And, you know, he's more known for coming from behind. He led in the pouring rain and just won. So, I mean, it didn't deter him. Yeah, it's more just the track itself. 800 meter track, short straight. You know, you want to be on the peg line, you want to be on the pace, and it's hard to make up ground from behind. So, you know, the bias is there more times than not.
All right. What about pricing a market? It's part art and part science, and I know you've chatted to someone like Ben Cray about how he goes about it. How's that evolved over the last year?
It's still, you know, still developing. You know, I've certainly improved, I'd say, in the past year with that. And, of course, a lot of credit goes to Ben for that. You know, he's helped me just understand the basics of it. And, you know, I've had to refine it a little bit to suit me and to suit, you know, WA and Gloucester Park. Just the one thing I'm still, you know, where I'm looking to improve on is, I guess, class. You know, it's well and good to get to look at the statistics of, say, the leaders win 45%, but, you know, when you get a more classy animal sitting outside, you know, I'm not going to say a much more inferior horse, but slightly inferior. It's for me, it's trying to find the right balance of, you know, who should be the favourite in the market. And the other one is tempo still. So I just, with pricing, you know, I'm looking still to improve on my ability to work out what sort of tempo will be in a race. And then, you know, you can price accordingly. If it's going to be slow, well, you really want to blow those back markers out because they're just not going to get into it. And, you know, if it's going to be a hot speed, then maybe they can't. There might be a strong horse that can close and get over the top of them late. So it's just, they're sort of the main couple that I'm trying to work on with my pricing at the moment.
And so once you've done the form, you've done your ratings, and then you look at the market, do you then go back and have another go over of the form, or are you locked into your original prices?
I'm pretty much locked in, yeah. I don't tend to change them too much. I mean, if there's a scratching, yes, we'll have to go back, and especially if it's going to be a key runner, well then, you know, it might have been the breeze horse, and now it's gone. Will there be another horse that will take up that spot? And if it was an enforcing type, will it also enforce? Or now that it's gone, you know, it'll be another horse that gets up there, but it just sits up there. It won't put the pressure on. So then you might readjust to favour that if it's a strong leader, or, you know, you might just give it a bit more and just shorten it in your market. So, you know, I look at that and change of tactics as well, of course. You know, sometimes I think a horse is going forward, I'll price it that way, and then surprisingly the stable will come out and say it's going back. So then, you know, I'll blow it out a bit more for that reason. But, you know, I'm not deterred by the price. You know, if I think it's $3 and they open up $10, well, I'm still going to back that I'm right and they're wrong. Of course, it's not always the case, but we assess races for a reason. You've got to back your own judgment. So that's one thing. Now I've started doing more of.
All right, so you're focusing on the one meeting a week at the moment. How many races are those do you not bet into at all?
I don't, if there's a trot race on the program, I don't even follow the form for the trotters over there. I mean, there's only maybe once per month the trotters come to town on a Friday night, so I won't bet into that. I don't tend to price the two-year-old or three-year-old races, well, especially early in the season. As they get closer to the sort of feature races, derbies, the Golden Slipper and that, really start crunching the form for the better runners. But, I mean, there's a lot of country sort of horses that come to town early on and they don't measure up and you don't see them again. So I just... You know, I don't spend too much time on it at this stage. And quite often there's a dominant horse, like right at the moment in the three-year-old ranks, Bodine Boaz is a dual Group 1 winner, and he just smashes everything that's racing at the moment. For me, I just ignore the race.
All right, so the races that you are betting into, do you have an overall profit on turnover goal in mind as a percentage?
That I'd like to make?
You know, 6 cents in the dollar, or, you know, do you have an actual goal, or that not at this stage?
Not at this stage. I mean, ideally when I feel like I've got to a point, you know, where I feel I am on a semi-professional level, I'd like to maybe 8%.
It's pretty realistic. Last time we spoke, you talked about wanting to stay disciplined and not take any shortcuts. How have you gone with both of those?
I'd say I'm still fairly disciplined. You know, I price the meeting. I stake according to what the spreadsheet says. I don't bet more or bet less just because you know, I'm in front or I'm down for the night. So, in that regard, I'm sticking to the rules. Yeah, not sure what else to say with that part.
No, that's right. And so, in a typical race, what percentage of your bank would you outlay?
I'd be out. Same with Ben, and well, the champion picks. You know, I'm essentially the copycat. Ben knows that. You know, it's a strategy that works for him, so it's one that I'm applying for myself. So, betting to collect, say, 5% of the bank, so 2.5% might be the standard sort of outlay, 2.5-3%.
Yeah, and I don't think I've made it clear, but you'll back multiple horses in a race.
Yeah, yes, exactly like Ben. Price it, get it to 100%, and back every single overlay that's there.
All right, so longer term, is your goal still to be full-time professional?
It has changed slightly. I would like to be, I'll use the term semi-professional. Ideally, long-term, I'd like to target probably 2, maybe 3 meetings per week. Just with Gloucester Park, it's more likely to be 2. There's the midweek program and the Metropolitan Friday night program. I'd like to transition to pricing each race on the midweek program. At this stage, I don't. I mean, there might be one race that takes my fancy, which will be the sort of Metropolitan performers that are racing in the midweek company. So essentially, it's a Friday night field, just racing on a Tuesday night. But that's sort of the path I'd like to take. So, you know, I've revised it a little bit. At this stage now, I don't want to go down the path of solely, relying on punting income. So I'd like a mix of working income and punting income. So semi-professional, part-time, whichever term you want to use.
And I think I know the answer, but I don't want to assume. So what's led to that decision as far as wanting the more stable income, but also to do the punt, you know, quite seriously?
Well, I'm 26 at the moment, and, you know, my next step in life is to save up for a house. And the best way to do that is to at least have some guaranteed income coming in, you know, and a bit of stability to pay the bills and whatnot. So that's one factor, and just stress. I mean, you know, 12 months on or 10 months on since our last chat, you know, I still, each and every week, it is a bit stressful. And I just, at this point in time, I just wouldn't want to be, you know, completely living off it day to day, paycheck to paycheck, so.
That makes sense. So what about the liquidity? Because for our thoroughbred punters, it can be a real issue getting a bet on. What's it like for harness, and in particular in the West?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I'm not, at this point in time, I'm not exactly betting to win $1,000 a race. So it's probably, you know, a question for someone like Trent Cooper, who's a WA form analyst, and, you know, he's a, you know, very serious punter. So it's probably a question.
Do you see that as a potential problem in that, you know, you can fine-tune your craft, your skills, and develop a good edge on the market, but then have that struggle of getting a bet on?
I'd say it would be. I mean, it's probably not just Western Australia, you know. Anyone with harness, you know, the corporates don't take too kind to people that have an idea, and, well, particularly people that take money from them. So, you know, it's certainly a problem.
All right. So if we have another chat either later this year or early in 2016, where do you think you'll be at that stage?
Oh, I'd like to have, you know, I'd like to be covering the 2 meetings that I outlined. So it's sort of, you know, it'd be between 15 to 20 races a week that I'd be looking at betting into, and just like to continue to improve upon, you know, my price assessment of races. And as mentioned earlier, I just want to improve on my ability to pick up the sort of tempo in a race. Yeah, just the lower class races are the ones that mainly get me. With the open class free-for-allers, I get a pretty good idea. They tend to race fairly consistent, whereas in the lower classes, which might be the MO onlys or C2 pluses they have on Friday nights now, you know, you think you've got a race worked out. Oh, there shouldn't be too much pace. There's no real death horse in the race. There's only 2 horses that may contest the lead, and, you know, you price it that way, think you've got it covered, and then next thing you see, they're 4 and 5 across the track, you know, all vying to get up there. So it's just, just one thing that, you know, I want to improve upon. And, yeah, you know, long term, it should help improve my profit.
Definitely. Oh, well, good luck with that. Thanks for joining us again today. It's interesting to track your journey and look forward to our next chat, as I said, either later in the year or early next year.
Great. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Thanks, Trent. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.